Hey, welcome to the Mead House. This is Jeff. I'm here with my buddy Chris.
How you doing today?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day. Spring is coming.
It is, finally.
Finally. It's been freaking cold.
A little cold today. Yesterday, we got to like 70.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. And oh my God, like, I'm not going to lie. Wintertime, I'm down in the dumps like anytime. And like, never enough sunlight.
Yeah.
Always
right
kind of
there with
sad.
You. Right there with you.
Ugh. But yeah.
So, well, but I was talking to him. I love winter, but my lungs don't like cold. I love spring, but my breathing doesn't like pollen because I have hay fever. So I'm just kind of messed up either way you go, but I still enjoy the weather.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, that first snowstorm of the year.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It
it's gorgeous.
Lovely. It's lovely.
And I, you know, about an hour, 2 hours. Okay. I'm done.
You can go now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's enough for me. And the rest of, you know, December, January, February.
Grumble, 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 grumble.
Hey, it's, you know, we're getting into March. So, So before we get started today, as usual, we need to thank our listeners. Because
absolutely.
Yeah, you guys are the raison d'etre for us, you know, getting together and talking about Mead and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We appreciate you guys, you know, giving us your time and attention. You know, so many of you guys have reached out to say, hey, we love the work or this, that, or the other.
And much appreciated.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
It's always nice to hear that we are helping you guys out and doing stuff that you guys find interesting because, you know, what else are we going to do?
Yeah. Well, okay. Then another thing, we need to thank Box and Barleycorn for sponsoring us.
That's true.
They are... Jake and his friends there are just outstanding with their information, their products, and that's where we get our what we need from. They have honey, they have the containers, they do anything, basically anything fermented, they have it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you need information, if you need supplies, if you need ingredients, a great go-to stop. So many homebrew stores these days are shuttering up and closing up shop, and the big box company owned by another guy named Jeff with the similar hairstyle is doing its part. So, you know, hey, but shop small business.
Small business. It's, you know, and plus, you're not going to get any better treatment anywhere else.
Absolutely
not. I mean, they want you to succeed so much, they are willing to hold your hand through the process.
Yeah.
And they're also offering, for listening to our podcast, a discount of 10% if you use our code MHP10.
MHP10.
It just doesn't trickle off my tongue. I apologize, but it doesn't.
You can follow the link to their shop in our show notes or just, you know, Google search Bacchus and Barleycorn. That'll get you there, too.
Excellent. Now, today I want to talk, before we get into our conversation, I have something came up with a mead I was doing.
Okay.
I want to get your feedback on it.
Sure.
I decided to try for a blueberry cinnamon mead.
All right.
And it's, don't get me wrong, I'm only doing a gallon test jar.
All right.
And I used approximately 2 1/3 pounds of honey.
Okay.
And I had about 1.18
all right
range.
Mm-hmm.
1.880 in gravity. It's fermenting, don't get me wrong. Very, very slowly. And the blueberries are in it.
So 1180 was your shorting gravity.
Yeah.
That's a little high.
Yeah, it was a little higher than I meant to, but that's what it ended up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it gives me a little bubbles every now and then. And when I took off the top, it has no film, no biofilm, no nothing indicating it's bad. It's just a thin layer of bubbles on top. And it's just not going. Any ideas?
I'm assuming you've given it nutrition.
Yes.
Have you? You probably don't have an oxygen one, do you?
I do not have
that. Okay. That might not be a terrible idea. It might not necessarily help in this case. 1180 is a little bit above... We talked, I think it was last week, about osmotic pressure amongst mm-hmm. a number of other things and like what happens if you put too much honey in your meat. There's kind of that. You're a little bit above what I would consider a borderline. My usual rule of thumb is never go above 1170. You're in a spot where I think the yeast are struggling.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of... container you've got it in. You said it's
glass jar. 1 gallon glass jar.
How much neck space do you have it in the jar?
About 1.5 inches.
I would get some distilled water and just dilute like 1/2 inch and see where your gravity goes.
And I'm even thinking I'll pull the bag of blueberries out at this point because they've been in there 2 weeks.
You've gotten what you're going to get from them.
Yeah, I think
at least from a flavor and a like dispersal of stuff standpoint. The yeast might be able to do more with the sugars in there, or, you know, do the biotransformation thing that is a little bit above my pay grade here. But yeah, you've probably got at least a decent amount of flavor. And if it comes down to it, you can always add something secondary too.
Okay. So I want to bring it up because I'm sitting here. The yeast was active when I put it in. Right. I could smell it. But once it hit the mead, the must, it just kind of, yeah, I'm here, I'm doing this, but no. So I want to ask that. Subject of the day is honey.
Honey.
And honeys can make a huge difference on the taste of your meat. I know this. It should be fairly obvious, but I wanted to bring this up.
I mean, we are talking about meat. Honey is kind of the thing that makes a meat a meat. Otherwise, you've got, what?
Wine. Water?
Yeah.
You have a fruit wine if you have fruit, or you have water with yeast. I don't know what that would make.
Sugar wash.
Hmm?
Sugar wash.
Sugar wash. Okay. Simple sugar. Simple syrup. Okay. But, and there are more types of honey out there than we could possibly list in a dozen shows.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. There's a lot.
Last year we went to a show, the Valkyrie Horn Mead Competition,
which by the time you guys are listening to, we will probably be wheels up and heading up to Minnesota for this year's Valkyrie Horn, by the way. So
stay tuned. We're going to have do some interviews with some meat masters there. And we're going to hopefully bring it on the show here, our experience there.
Yes.
Within a couple weeks after that.
At the very least, we will be telling you guys all about what we did and what we saw and how great it was. And, you know, expect some quality content coming from our experience there at Valkyrie's Horn. Because, you know, I know from... I've done at least three of those now. They deliver consistently.
Yeah, it's my second time, and it's such a wonderful community. They asked if I was coming back this year, and that was, you remember me? How nice. So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun there. So, there was one man there. What was his name? He had all the honey from his bank?
Adam.
He had 96 2-ounce jars of honey, different kinds of honey.
Mm-hmm.
And with toothpicks, you could try any of them. And I kid you not, I tried as many as I get away with. My tongue would say, no, I'm done. I'm not going to tell you what this tastes like anymore because there's just too much. Everything from meadow foam to fireweed to avocado to more than one kind, like two or three kinds of orange blossom.
Yeah, there was a Florida orange blossom, a California orange blossom, and a Mexican orange blossom. And they all tasted profoundly different.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
And there were herb honeys, and it was amazing. So when you're using your mead and making your mead, your honey can have an impact. Now, basically, you need a clove honey or a wildflower honey.
Clover or wildflower honey are like your basic building blocks. Yeah, you use those to get the sugar content to make the ABV up there, and that's what makes a mead, right?
Now, mind you, that doesn't mean you can't go to Costco. It doesn't mean you can't go to Costco or your supermarket or any honey supplier, local or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just don't get honey syrup, that's corn syrup and honey.
Right.
That's going to mess you up. If you get actual pure honey, even if it's blended, you can make a decent mead. We've both done it.
Yes. The bitch is knowing whether it's what's actually honey syrup and what's, actual honey. When you can, support local beekeepers. And I don't know if you're familiar with the news, but I follow a couple like beekeeper guys on like YouTube and other podcasts and things like that. This is a bad year for bee survival.
Yeah.
Coming out of winter.
I've heard, I don't follow that, but I've heard that just in passing.
And, it would not surprise me if we see a little bump in prices because of it. Cause that's the nature of all foodstuffs these days, whether it's eggs or milk or whatever, like any excuse, we're going to bump that price.
But so be careful. Try to get actual real honey. That said, in Norway, they have the biggest mead competition in the world. And a third of that is brown sugar mead.
Hmm.
They don't use honey. They use brown sugar. Not something I want to get into. If I want to do that, I'll make a maple wine. Maple syrup wine. But, try to get yourself honey because you're going to get the essence of what mead is.
Right.
So... we have a few honeys here that I'm going to let Jeff tell you about.
Hey, before we get into tasting these honeys, though, there's probably something else we should be tasting.
We should. Okay, this is kind of a special tasting for me. My son, my youngest son, decided to make his own mead.
Let's pause for a second here. Your youngest son is 24. He's an adult. He is of drinking age.
Yes, yes. I forget the fact my children are adults, and he is 24, and he's been around me making meat for quite a while. And he has come to the point, he goes, well, Dad, I want to make a meat. Now, my son, his name is Rowan, and Rowan likes old-fashioned flavors, root beer, sarsaparilla, licorice, birch beer, things like that. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm going to make a sarsaparilla meat. And he did. And that's what we're tasting today. He calls it Yeehaw. So, you know, points for that. But he did a couple things. A, he made, in a gallon container, put 3 pounds, 14 ounces of honey.
Okay. That's not the most, but that's a lot.
He really shot it up there. He added the water. He did his flavoring, his sassafras root in secondary.
Right. Okay.
He used 2 ounces of that in secondary. And he left it for 2 days.
Okay.
He did not filter it. He racked it. He did not filter it.
No. This is hazy. Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest. If I were judging this, I would probably count points off for hazy. That just hasn't been, it hasn't sat enough. For a home mead maker, I don't care.
And I know, and the only reason I know roughly the alcohol content is because I measured, but he did not. He didn't care. So he was just making, he was going, oh, let's try a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and go. And it actually turned out pretty well. So,
you know, more power to him, but I do not support the lackadaisical kind of no structure, no notes. How, if this turned out to be the best mead ever, how could he replicate it?
Yeah.
He
only made a gallon. But it's, yeah,
five and that, bottles.
Wasn't even. Three and a half. That's not, no, four and a half. I'm sorry, four and a half. The bottle I brought today was the half bottle. Anyway, but I, because I am a little bit tighter about that, I did all those measurements. So it's possible to do this again. But he measured his water, he measured his honey, he measured his sassafras. Stop. That's all he did. I measured the time, the specific gravities, all of that myself. Because I'm sitting here, no, because with your luck, you'll give me a mead because it's award-winning and you won't be able to do it again.
What kind of yeast did he use?
He used the 71B.
Okay. Good neutral choice. Did what kind of nutrient?
He used Go-Firm for okay. nutrient, and he or for his to get his yeast started, and he used a Firmade.
Okay.
For his starter, for right? His neutral, and that's really it.
Okay. That's all we really need. I mean, it's really good that he used Go-Firm with so much honey in there because that's, you know.
Yeah, that's...
You got to get it off to a good start when you're giving it a high sugar environment to live in. And there are plenty of people that like Firmade O and prefer it to Firmade K.
I'm just not one of them.
I don't see the difference.
Yeah, and I'm cheap because I use less and cost less. But I will tell you, he also stopped fermentation at 1.040. So it was pretty sweet just at that point. It was pretty sweet at that point. But he also, when I did my calculations, it turned out to be 14.3% alcohol.
Okay. Seems reasonable. So 040 is, yeah, pretty sweet. Let's give this an evaluation. Like I said, it's hazy. It's kind of I wouldn't call it straw. It's more of an amber color and a kind of a medium amber. Obviously, like the thicker parts of the glass, it looks a little darker. On the you know, edge of the glass, it's down to a lighter color.
I've got like 2 inches of my glass. I can't see the bottom from the top. It's pretty hazy.
I'm not seeing any legs on it. That's, who cares? I mean, that's a wine snob thing, really. But it's one of those things you check to talk about. Give this a sniffy here.
What do you get?
Start.
Well, that's not what I want to talk about.
No, no. It's springtime.
It's very mild on fragrance for me. I'm not smelling a lot.
I get, there's a little bit of honey sweetness. There's a, I'm not sure if I'm getting sarsaparilla or if that's kind of a floral kind of honey thing. I'm assuming this is just like a clover or wildflower based.
Just clover.
Mm-hmm.
Just clover.
Which, you know, we say just clover, but there are like some like white clovers or like some years of Clover are spectacular
yeah.
and have their own character that like yeah. But Clover is unfortunately like
the starting point.
It's become synonymous with a basic honey.
Yeah. So I'm not getting a whole lot of smell out of, other than the slight honey sweet. Now it's got a fairly smooth taste from what I've tasted here.
Yeah, it is sweet. Got a decent acid bite to it. There is some tannin. I mean, it's not out of balance. It's okay.
In my opinion, and mind you, I did try it because even before I got here, because my son, here, try it, Dad. And sure, why not? And for a first attempt, he did just fine.
Yeah, no, this is
a solid meat.
Solid first attempt.
Yeah, and his next, he has told me his next adventure is to make a licorice mead.
Okay.
Make a black licorice mead.
You know, licorice, anise, those kind of flavors are not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but, you know, there is a reason absinthe is a
popular drink.
Well, I don't necessarily say it's popular, but it's... It's got its followers.
It does have some. I'm among them.
I can see where he's coming from, wanting to try a licorice kind of mead. And, you know, I'm kind of with him. I like a bunch of these old man flavors. The birch beer, sarsaparilla, you know, I'm still kind of miffed that Culver's doesn't have butterscotch in their concrete anymore.
Well,
get off my lawn.
Anyway, but yeah, Rome, good job. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you for trying. I'm even more proud of you that you did well.
Yeah, no, this is a very good first attempt. And especially, you know, I think he has handicapped himself a little bit not taking measurements and stuff like that. But yeah, no,
whenever he does this, I'm going to be there. Well, if he's not going to make measurements, I'm gonna, because I don't want to miss out on a chance of having a really good blend.
You said 2 ounces of sarsaparilla per gallon, right?
Yeah.
Thereabouts, you think? Yeah. I think that's about right.
And he left it in there for literally 2 days. He tasted it the first day after it was in there. Mm-hmm. He said he wanted a little bit more. Tasted the second day. That's where I went and took it out.
Yeah. If I were going to repeat it, I don't know if I would necessarily do a little bit more. I might like a little bit more. The sarsaparilla flavor is nice. It's not heavily pronounced. It might be hiding behind some of the honey sweetness, too.
Mm.
Contact time, it wouldn't hurt to leave it another day, maybe, instead of like more, but I would say either a little bit more or a little bit longer contact time, but I wouldn't go too much
further. He did actually tell me that I'm taking it out now because I could add it, but I can't subtract it.
Right. Well, and the other trick is, especially with like the root and vegetable, like really kind of woody things, once you get about a week into that, you stop getting the good stuff and start getting
the green vegetable flavor.
Yeah, the woody flavors. And you just don't want that. So if you're a week in and you're not getting the flavor you want out of it, it's time to pull that sarsaparilla root and put some fresh stuff in.
Yeah. But there you go. Good job, son of mine. Proud of you.
Cheers, Ro.
Cheers. All right. Now back to the honey.
Yes.
We have actually a few varieties here.
Mm-hmm.
One, we got two honeys I got from a European market. And they're from Kyrgyzstan, you said?
Yes, Kyrgyzstan.
Kyrgyzstan. I didn't think I said that right. One is a white honey, and it appears, I mean, it's kind of chilly right now, so it's solid. It is pale, pale yellow white.
Right. This is, white is an appropriate descriptor here, and white is the color of the honey from, like, the National Honey Board honey charts or whatever. Like, this is a white honey.
Mm-hmm. So, give this a try here real quick.
I like how they label it as a color and not a varietal source, though.
Now, both of them are considered wildflower honeys. But, wow, that's a very... It's just sweet to me. There's not a whole lot of anything else in there.
It's sweet and kind of waxy.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a... It's a creamy kind of a flavor, and I don't know if it's because it is crystallized solid, but I feel like there's a lot of wax particle in the honey itself.
I'm not good enough to grab that from it like you are, but it's okay. It's all I've really tasted in the white honey is sweet. I don't really taste anything else.
Well, white honey is very problematic to me. There are some honeys, like I believe, I can't remember if it's alfalfa or maybe it's another kind of varietal that starts with an A, but it turns the same shade of winter white. It is almost colorless, and when it crystallizes, it looks like a candle,
Yeah, that
candy
looks.
wax.
Yours is much better. When I said I looked at it, when I first looked, I said, oh, that looks like, well, lard.
Yeah, that too. Here's the problem, though. I've known a beekeeper or two that were not necessarily the most ethical of beekeepers, I think. And rather than like having their bees going out and foraging for nectar from flowers, I suspect that they were doing a predominantly like sugar feed. That sugar was being stored, and then the labeled like bees have stored it and dehydrated it and hit it with their enzymes, but it's still a sugar water syrup source is now honey. That's a suspicion on my part. It's not a, I can't confirm facts for anything, so I mean I'm not gonna go public with anything, but I've heard of other beekeepers doing that in
Well, you had bees once, and that's how you give sugar solution to get them started,
yes.
to get to get them established.
Right. Generally, there are two times when you give bees sugar. Like right now, when it's the very early part of spring, when not much is blooming, but they need to get moving, or when you're installing like a new like hive package, whatever they call it, and they need to build comb. Because like, let's take one of these jars that we're holding here for example. This is like a pint jar. In order to make honey, they're dehydrating this to something like between 16 and 18% water in the hive. So they're already taking nectar and getting a lot of water out of it to get to this level. To metabolize honey and turn it into wax,
It's much further.
they're going to take this and get about one eighth of what.
Jeez, that's
Right. That takes a lot. And so you need to supplement that. The other time to do supplementation, and it's the one that people get a little bit iffy back and forth about, is after fall harvest, before winter, or just, hey, the bees don't look like they have enough stored for winter. Let's get some nice honey on the or let's get some syrup on these guys and give them something to eat for the winter so that they can survive. But yeah, no,
That's the information I didn't really. I knew I saw you do it a couple of times. I didn't know why. I appreciate that.
yeah. Well, and that's just it. I don't think it ever hurts to give our audience a little appreciation for how the bee's life cycle works
Yeah,
too.
the bees. You told me recently that it's been a bad year for bees this last year, this year.
It's been a bad couple decades for bees, to be honest. But this year is particularly bad. I mean, we've had survival rates in the 60s, 70s for the last couple decades, which is just not great.
No, that's really bad.
I've heard this year in some places survival rates are as low as 40%.
Oh my gosh.
So,
That's a declining population there.
luckily we have a lot of the honeybee industry is set up in a lot of places like California and Texas that are pretty warm year round and have consistent breeding groups there. That population is probably going to bounce back.
Here's hoping.
We've faced bad years before, we'll face more
We'll
and
face them again.
we'll get out.
Okay, now the next one we have here is again from the same company. It's a darker honey. It's like an amber honey. Again, it's cold enough, it's crystallized. And even when it was in the store that I got it was still solid. It was not a liquid.
Yep, this looks like a it looks like a caramel sauce or something like that. It's caramel color, light brown kind of a thing, or peanut butter.
Okay, that's
Yeah,
pretty good. It's almost a peanut butter, it's not quite there.
right. It's kind of like a light, creamy peanut butter color. Let's get a little sample of that guy.
Again, I got these a little while back. I brought them for the show, and this is the first time I've opened them, so I have no knowledge of this prior now.
It's interesting.
Well, that's a lot better flavor.
It's a way more complicated flavor.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
I'm not getting as much waxiness. It may be because it's got actual like flavor stuff in it. It has a lot of like natural acidity to it
Oh
too.
man,
It's
it's.
got a little bit of a like a just a little acid zing bite to it.
And when I put that little taste in my mouth, the white one, it just kind of sat there. This one just coated the mouth
Yeah, this
very
kind of
smoothly.
it just melts a little bit. It melts in the mouth.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I might get more of that despite the cost. It's kind of expensive. It's like $13 for this pint.
Oof.
Yeah, it's harsh. But I might make a gallon of this.
I mean, and we'll talk about this once we're done with the honey tasting. This is okay, 15.87, so it is a pint jar. You have other options though, other than just burning a bunch of cash to get a full thing of that. And yeah, like we'll talk about how to use honey
Okay,
in
cool.
addition to stuff.
I don't know how to do what you're talking about now, and I'm not even familiar with it, so I'm looking forward to that conversation.
Yeah. So we're gonna change gears just a little bit and try some honey that I had sitting around. This is from Sean Harris up in Hawaii.
Hawaii. And I can't pronounce the Hawaii name of his farm. It's Waiokai something.
Waokele? Maybe.
Well, okay, that could be it.
Sean, if you're listening, you reach out, tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah. By all means, I don't speak Hawaiian and you live there, so help us out here a little bit. So anyway, okay, so this is lemon blossom.
This is lemon blossom, yeah, and this is, I've tried a little bit of this a little while ago,
Okay, so I've never had this.
and this has been in storage in my garage, so it is crystallized as well. Just everything's on an even playing field here.
Oh, you can taste the lemon in that. That's really something. That's actually almost the little bit I had, it almost slapped me in the mouth there. That was so much.
Yeah, I mean it is sweet. It's a honey,
It's a honey, but
but
that lemon is right there.
it pops like having lemon zest. That very punchy. It has the acidity of the lemon. It has the flavor of the
That
lemon.
very citrus bite of the lemon, it's all there.
I've had meats made with this before and really appreciated it. And it, yeah.
I'm gonna get you some of this from Sean. That's extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, no. The only bear is that, like, yeah, Sean lives in a consistently warm climate, but there's still like seasonal availability of all his stuff.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
when is lemon blossom available?
I mean,
Oh.
but I will get any Sean anything that Sean has because they're all extraordinary. But I'm willing to wait for the ones I want.
Yeah, the problem I have with ordering from Sean is not a desire problem. It's
It's
generally a
a
like
financial one.
a financial or a space problem.
Yeah, I'll get a storage shed. I don't care. Oh, I actually counted the number of cases of meat I've made and stored in the last year. I have 14 and a half cases of meat in my storage locker. 12 bottles per case of 12 different kinds.
Sorry, Kat. Sorry, I got your husband into this hobby.
Don't tell her sorry, because I sent meat over here last time that you came down to try. So don't tell me this. I'm not apologizing.
Is true. This is true.
We'll get into types of meats that we've done at some time in the future, I hope, because we both love experimenting.
Yes. I mean, it's if I just want a basic honey mead, there are enough places like Pirtle up in Weston. It makes a great basic
Chaucer's
creation.
not quite as good, but
It's still there.
it's
You can
still
go to
there.
most liquor stores and get it. The fun is like, hey, what else can I do with this?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, there are some old traditions of making mead, like in Polish or Ethiopian styles and things like that. But for the most part, it doesn't have the kind of like history and style that like you go to Germany and every different town or like city area has their own style of beer that they've been making for a few centuries.
Yeah.
It's just the field is open and
And
wow.
I was told by a man who I guess studies this at some point, in some degree, there are over a quarter of a million types of fruit out there in the world.
Makes
Which
sense.
means if you just do one of each of those, you have over a quarter million meads you can make with that. I've made dragon fruit mead. I've made chokecherry mead. It's possible.
I mean, not all of those are going to be pollinated by bees. Not all of those are going to be in a climate where bees are like raised. But even if we're talking 10% of a quarter of a million,
That's still a lot of meat kinds there, buddy.
yeah, that's a lot. So yeah, the field is wide open, and that's just fruit. There's also spices. There's also grains. There's
Fruit.
so much stuff that
Yeah.
we could be putting into this, and combinations of any of those. Like, we're still talking a very wide field that we're narrowing down. We're gonna have to talk about figuring out like flavor
Oh,
combinations and
yeah.
stuff like that here soon.
Actually, I went to a donut shop recently nearby a lake called Hannah's Donuts. Wonderful place, love their donuts. They said, "Hey, we got one filled donut. One donut we can fill for you. Would you like to? Would you like it?" "Sure." "What would you like in it?" So I told him, "Key lime pie and lemon." He goes, "I've never made that one before." He made the donut for me, then grabbed a donut hole and made one for himself. He goes, "Oh, we're going to start offering that."
I mean, yeah. And it seems obvious, right? Because,
Yeah, it
like, how
does.
many lemon lime sodas are there in the world already? Like, half a dozen, like, major market things between Sprite, 7-Up, and whatever the heck else is out there. Like, yeah, lemon and lime just go together. And key lime pie is great. And lemon filling, lemon curd is great. So, yeah.
Yeah, it should have been obvious, but okay, now going on the fact of odd things to find in honey, your next honey is actually something I'm both looking forward to and a little apprehensive of. I'm not a coffee person.
Yes, this
And
is coffee blossom honey. And my wife is not a coffee person either. She tried a little. This is we were getting set up and I was, making a mess in the brew room here as I am wont to do, and thoroughly enjoyed it. This is one that I have been excited to get because I got to try some of this at some point or another. I forget whether this was something I tried at a Mazer an age and a day ago, or if this was like something I had it brewed into a mead, but I knew this was going to be good. And
holy cow. I mean, again, I'm not a coffee person, but that's good. That's seriously good.
Yeah, it does not taste like it has a kind of a coffee taste if you really watered down the coffee and really oversweetened it,
Yeah,
but
but
it's not like
it's not in your face. It's not that bitterness of coffee, but it's got a subtle flavor of the coffee in there.
bear in mind the big part of the bitterness of the coffee comes from the fact that those raw beans are roasted. So,
Understood. But yeah, it's not bitter at all. And even the coffee flavor in and of itself is very understated, is a good word for me to put that. But that's really good.
yeah, no, this the other problem I have with Sean's honeys is knowing what the hell to do with them. They are so good, and I want to go, okay,
Café
I could do so many different things with this, but what's going to be the best use of this 20-pound bag of honey,
au lait. Okay. Now, speaking of Sean, I'm really, I a while back before a little more than a year ago, I got a couple of bags of his Boar's Blood Punch mix, which has like elderflower, raspberry, rosehip,
Like white
vanilla.
pineapple, or is that a different one?
I think that's white. I think that's a different one. And this is just a freeze-dried fruit blend that you turn into a tea to add to your mead as brewing. So let me see if I can pull up what is actually in it here real quick, because I was kind of impressed with the it has dried raspberries, pomegranate areoles, rose hips, hibiscus, vanilla, and freeze-dried elderflower. And honestly, all of that's freeze, almost all of that's freeze-dried.
Sure. Yeah, I mean it's got to be shelf stable in like in
And
bags.
I got two of them. Each bag's worth 5 pounds or 5 gallons of mead. And so I'm taking one bag and I'm turning into, I'm making a basic traditional. And I'm going to add the tea for, simmered into it when it's done. And the other one, I'm going to use his honey that I've not decided which one I'm getting, but I'm going to add it to that and see what the difference is. But I'm really looking forward to that.
So you're taking more of like a, you're not making a tea with the second one, you're just adding it to the finished mead in secondaries.
Well, according to the directions on his label there, make it into a tea and then add. But I think I'm just going to add the second one here. So
Well, and
he wants you to make a tea out of it to make it blossom and rehydrate so it transfers flavor better. And I'm not sure.
this is an age and a day ago we talked to, I think it was Jess from Mountain Rose Herbs. It's been so long, I don't remember her name for off the top of my head. But we talked about the difference between tincturing a flavor and making like a tea out of the flavor. Because with a tincture, you're using alcohol, which is a non-polar molecule, to extract flavors. Whereas the tea uses heat and the polarity of the water. So you get two different flavors out of this result. If you're using this in a mead that is already in secondary, and basically extracting that way, I think you're going to get different flavors because you'll probably have like a, what, probably between 12 and 14% or maybe higher. I don't know what your plan is there, but there's going to be a level of alcohol in there that will help that extraction.
Okay, I'm not. I'll tell you, I haven't made that plan yet. I'll let you know as it comes up, and we'll bring it up. I'll bring it up here. But I will say, I do make my own vanilla. extract with alcohol.
Yeah.
I've got two of them. One was actually made with Sean's vanilla I got from him.
Yeah.
I made the horrible mistake. Well, horrible being relative. I made a horrible mistake. I bought a pound of honey from him, a pound of vanilla beans from him. And those things are so fragrant, the vacuum packing does not seal in the fragrance.
No, it does not. No, I have a pound of his vanilla beans as well. I don't remember if I got a pound or a half pound or what size I got, but
it's a lot.
I have 3 pound or 3 pint jars of vanilla extract, like aging in my spice cabinet right now.
And my old, and actually I use his in its own separate extract. I split the beans, put them in there with a, you know, high grain alcohol. And it got darker than what I've been making for the last 4 years. Inside 3 months.
Nice.
I mean, it was. My wife says, I'm using this one. I'm sitting here, I'm not mad at you. That was amazing.
Yeah. No, the previous vanilla that I got from a vanilla bean somewhere, probably from the city market, I mean, don't really remember. It took at least 6 months to get to a point where it was like as opaque as the vanilla extract you get at the supermarket, mm-hmm. right? That takes time.
It's absolutely worth it. Don't get me wrong. Along.
Yeah. I don't think they're quite as dark as my darkest one yet, but they're. But the flavor, the smell, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing beats fresh vanilla beans.
Oh, my gosh, no. It's awesome.
But, yeah, tincturing as a spice blend kind of a thing. Highly recommended. The cheat code for that. Get the French vodka from Costco.
Okay.
That's like $20 for a handle, like 1.75 liters.
Wow.
It is very neutrally flavored. For whatever reason, the French vodka is like a... I think somebody's seriously ripping off Grey Goose there.
Okay.
It's a very smooth vodka. The American vodka, it has a heartburn to it. I don't recommend adding that to anything.
Okay. I'll be honest, the only things I've used so far is Everclear.
Yeah.
The one I got when I first started long, long ago. And now I have a Russian vodka I've used for the one with Sean's beans.
Okay. Yeah. The Everclear is pretty harsh. They're going for alcohol content, not alcohol quality, most of the time. So,
more than fair. I mean, that's what I had at the time. So,
yeah. You're with any luck, you're doing enough flavor extraction with it that you're not having to add a lot. I play with tinctures quite a bit. I've also got a cinnamon tincture going, and somewhere or another, I have I was planning to do an apricot and cardamom mead.
That would be awesome.
I have a. Cardamom tincture made with apricot liqueur.
Okay, let's get back to honey.
Yeah, let's talk about honey. We were talking about honey and we got off on a...
Shockingly, we got sidetracked on other subjects.
I think our tangents took tangents.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, that never happened with us. Anyway. I've tried... Okay, the honey makes a huge difference in the flavor. And as an example, when we were at Valkenhorn last year, I tried... the three types of orange blossom honey.
Right.
At the last day, they offered samples of two orange blossom meads. They were just traditional meads with orange blossom honey.
Right.
One was from Florida orange blossom. One was from Mexico orange blossom. Even in the finished product of mead, the flavor was, you might as well have given me an apple and a grapefruit.
Right.
Indifference. I mean, it was that far apart. I mean, they both tasted similar as orange blossom. But the flavor was so markedly different, it was astonishing.
And, you know, I had a strong preference before for Florida orange blossom.
That
Mexican orange blossom.
It was really good.
Ooh, kicked it in the butt.
Really good. Really. Now, I'm hoping I can talk to Jeff, and we're going to take pictures while we're there.
Yes.
And we're going to put them video. No video. Nobody wants. I don't think anybody wants to see us, per se. Anyway, but... I want to take pictures there and put them on the website.
Yeah,
for sure. So, you know, you can see what we see there. This is going to the Lost Star Brewery in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I think Lost Star. Yes.
I'm pretty sure it's Lost Star. It used to be a factory to make parts for the war effort in World War II. Now it's a brewery that is extraordinarily cool. They have food trucks there. They have games there. They have amazing beers there. I'm told I don't brew beer per se because, well, her and I don't get along.
It's unfortunate, you know, I'm going to have to do all the bragging stuff on my own, and you're just going to have to sit quietly and watch.
Yeah, I will sit and nod profoundly at how the wonderfulness you make. Mm. Anyway, but honey can make a huge difference because the flavor you get from the honey that you taste will translate very profoundly into what you make with it.
Right.
Yeah, please remember that when you ferment, the taste becomes more intense, generally speaking.
Especially as you're talking about honey, because, we talked several episodes ago now, about how there are a limited number of flavor components going into honey, right? Compared to like wine or beer or
No,
something like that.
it's like we have like one quarter of the number of flavor components.
Something like that. Yeah, it's ridiculously small in comparison to a wine. But by the same token, once that sugar is gone, the other flavor components of the honey have nothing to hide behind.
No, it is. I this coffee honey that we've just tasted, that is the coffee flower. I'm sorry, coffee flower honey that I just tasted. I'm looking forward to what you make with it because I want to see what that does.
So let's talk about using honey in meads.
Okay.
Obviously, the basic way to talk about using honey in meads is putting into primary, right? It's building up your building blocks. There are other ways to approach this. You can also add a limited amount in, for example, secondary. It's not as commonly done, but if you decide you need a little bit of flavor boost or a little bump to your ABV after you've got going for a while, or you're trying to make a higher ABV mead that you know will,
That's never been a goal of mine. I've never done that,
right.
but I see where it could be beneficial if you want that.
Some people I have talked to, I've never done the step feeding either, but they talk about step feeding a mead so that they start with a certain amount of honey, and once it's chewed through a good amount and it's got its the colony size of the yeast built up, then they add another like 20 points, and then they add another 20 points until they get to their target number, and the yeast is cooking and going, and that way they get a higher ABV or a thicker, fuller body mead, or incorporate more fruit later. The reasons for it, I'm not exactly sure on. It obviously is dependent batch for batch. But that's one approach that I've heard of people using for. And I just don't go for that heavy or high alcohol of mead these days.
I'm bending more towards the flavor of the meat more than anything else anymore. The alcohol content is nice, but it's secondary. The thing I do more often than that is I'll back sweeten meat.
Yes, and that's where I was going next, because back sweetening, especially with these nice varietal honeys that, let's be honest, they're going to cost more than your Costco or your Restaurant Depot like
Or
Wildflower.
wholesale, whatever
Yeah,
place you get
exactly.
your honey, they'll cost significantly more. So therefore, use them at the end and use less of it.
Right. Like I'm not kidding when I say that generally I can get away with as little as 2 ounces per gallon of honey for back sweetening. If all I want is a little,
Per gallon. Oh wow, I
that's
don't think I've ever used that little sweetening. I like sweet honey though.
you
I like
do like
sweet meat.
sweet meads. I you know my tendency is more in the dry to semi-sweet range. I want a little bit of I want enough sweetness to highlight the flavors I want to highlight, and that's about it. But I've also gone as high as like 6 ounces per gallon and been very pleased with the results of the varietal. It tasted to me similar enough to something that was actually fermented wholly from that varietal.
Yeah,
So
it's. I don't know if I call it a cheat. I don't call it a cheat because I'm simply economizing.
this is again
Because
an age and a day ago, my former co-host Ryan and I got into a discussion about what's cheating, and
I don't know this one.
I had jokingly called adding some red food coloring to a strawberry mead cheating,
Okay.
because
Oh no, my.
strawberry tends to fall out.
Oh no, I it you wouldn't know I had strawberry in there if you looked at the
Right,
strawberry meat I made.
right, right, right. So I added just the basic, like, what is it, Wilson's food coloring,
Coloring
red.
red number five, whatever it
Yeah,
was.
to keep it red, and called that cheating because I was like, look, it's a strawberry mead. It's not gonna be right if it doesn't look red. And he's like, oh, that's not cheating. That's just getting the results you need. And I was like, I was kidding. I don't care. The mead police are not coming after me.
They're very lazy, but honestly, we will say cheat a lot, and we'll laugh about it because what you're trying for is a flavor you like. The end result is what you enjoy.
Right. At the end of the day, if you're not like if you're making mead for yourself and your friends and your family, who cares?
Yeah.
That if you're making it for competition, at least be honest with what you're calling cheating. And judges, I'm probably not going to care either.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know. On the future episode, I'm going to talk to you about the things you use to keep color in meads. That's future.
Yeah, we will definitely talk about some of those little tricks and tips and additives and little things like that that can be very helpful. There are also some yeasts, believe it or not, that are more aligned to keeping, especially like the reds and dark purple kind of anthocyanin-based colors as well. Yeah, we can definitely reach that.
Yeah, I would like to talk about that because here's a few things. I also want to, I mean, I'll be honest, at my point in mead making, they say, do this. Okay, you did that. Cool, what did I just do? I would like to know more.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, that is a frustrating thing for newbies because it feels like a lot of people will tell you very dogmatic reasons to do this, that, or the other without explaining the why. And then you get months and levels and layers into it, and you're still doing the thing that you were dogmatically told to do. You were never really told why. And then you realize there might be other ways to do this, and nobody's really explained to me why to do one or the other.
It's not even that for me. I mean, I don't mind doing what I'm told for the sake of getting what I want out of the end of it.
Right.
I like to know, if I want to alter things, I want to know what I'm doing is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that if I want to alter it, I know what I'm doing.
Sure.
I just want the knowledge so I'm not blindly following a recipe. I'm making a recipe.
Right. And hey, this is me calling it out to everybody on social media, whether it's Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, or TikTok, or wherever you're giving meat advice. If you're going to give meat advice, explain your logic behind it for people so that they know and we can commiserate. And
let me say again, you know, I don't mind being told, do this. But even Jeff, you know, I'll say, well, why do I add this particular additive? He goes, for this reason. And that was all the explanation I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, he didn't go into the science of it. He didn't go into what does that. He just said, for example, I'm going to throw it out there, rougeberry.
Yeah.
And I said, why am I doing this? So it stays red and purple. It's going to keep your color. Stop. I'm done. I got my information. I'm moving on.
And it's rougeberry isn't, you know, flawless, but it's going to help.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, a lot of this stuff is. A lot of my advice, more often than not, is a, hey, this will help a little.
Fair.
I'm not an optimist in a lot of ways, so.
If it'll help, I'm in.
I mean, we'll help a little bit. It's not going to be the solution that's going to solve world hunger, but yeah, it might keep your meat red for another 6 months.
Cool. So I think we've gone over the honey bit. Now, before we go, we leave this, if you're going to use varietals, if you can afford to use varietals, because they tend to be...
They get spendy. They get spendy fast.
They get spendy fast. I highly recommend it, because you're going to get such a complex nuance to your mead.
Right.
But you do not have to make it from primary. Use it in back sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Use it when you're gonna taste the differences more, in my opinion.
Or blend it. You know, use one part coffee blossom and three parts wildflower.
Yeah.
You're still getting some coffee blossom flavor. If you're going into primer, you don't need to take 20 pounds of coffee blossom into a 6 or 7 gallon batch. You can do, you know, 5 and 15.
Yeah, it's all good. Now, and remember, you know, again, I'm going to say this, I'll say this to my dying day. I've made perfectly acceptable meads that all of my friends have enjoyed from base wildflower honey from warehouse.
Right.
It's completely feasible. Nobody said, oh, they never said, oh, this isn't a wildflower honey. This is just a base honey. That's never come up.
I've been making mead for 12-ish years now.
Yeah. And it's 5 or 6.
I have jokingly referred to, for an age and a day, the like 5 pound little like quart size bottles you get from Costco as training wheels.
Yeah.
I still use training wheels.
Always. I mean, I still use the training wheels from Costco. I still use it from Restaurant Depot. These are things to use for restaurants on the table. They're not high-quality honeys. They're not honey syrup.
It's true source verified, and I'm willing to say, hey, that's close enough that I know this is actual honey from an actual beekeeper.
Yeah.
I'm willing to go that far.
Yeah.
I mean, would I get a nicer quality honey from a local beekeeper? Maybe. Probably.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've gotten better honey from local beekeepers, but, you know, that's my back sweetener. Anyway, so pleasure being here, Jeff.
Yes, of course.
We'll hope to see you on the next show. I'm going to see Jeff on the next show, but I hope to see all our listeners on the next show.
I hope he sees me on the next show. Otherwise, we're, you know, some problems.
Yeah. But, well, you know, Valkyrie's Horn is going to be a thing. We could We could miss the best show, you know, never know.
We could be recording blind, drunk, and just hoping that everything comes out.
Yeah, it's so. A weekend I'll never remember.
No, cheers, Chris.
Cheers, Rev.